Blog Talk Radio.
On this Friday evening, 7 p.m. on the East Coast, 4 p.m. on the West Coast. This is the Voice of Reason talk show with your host, Wayne Cooper. So glad that you could join in with us today. Today, we're going to finish up the discussion we had on Wednesday as we're talking about a call for unity. Can a divided nation heal? That's a good question, is it not? Can a divided nation heal? You could say this is part two. We are glad to be here today, and I am looking forward to it, having a special guest with me in the person of Pastor Russell Moore from the Holy Nation Church there in the city of Columbia, South Carolina. So we are glad that he could join us. And again, so glad that you could tune in as well. And this is an important question. The last 4 years, our country has been through a lot. You know, we've been through a lot. We've seen a lot. We've heard a lot. And of course, more recently, a couple of weeks ago, we saw a mob try to, they actually did invade the Capitol, and a lot of things has happened since. We saw our former president, Donald J. Trump, be impeached for a second time, a historical act. And then, of course, he spent his last day in office on Tuesday, and then departed the White House early Wednesday morning, and then around noon, our new President Joseph Biden Jr. was sworn in as our nation's 46th president. And so we are here today, and we know that this is a serious situation. So we are a divided nation, and we're asking the question, can a divided nation heal? And so I hope that you will join us. Let me ask Pastor Moore, are you here with us yet? Thought he was here with us. Okay, we're trying to get him here with us. At any rate, again, this is so glad you could join us. I'm going to take a little short break, and I'll be back in about 30 seconds, okay? Stay with me here. We want to have a good discussion. All right, hold on a second here. Reason talk show with Wayne Cooper again. Thank you. We're here with Pastor Russell Moore. He's here with us today again from Columbia, South Carolina, and we're glad that he can join us. And so, Pastor Moore, as you know, we've discussed this subject about our divided nation, and I've stated on Wednesday that our country has never been as divided as we are now. And then we asked the question, whose fault is it? And then, of course, I have given some suggestions that I think, first of all, I spoke about the mainstream media, at least in my perspective. I believe that they are primarily responsible for dividing the country by being unprofessional and showing blatant partiality. And then, of course, we have to consider that the two major political parties bear some responsibility for the division in America due to their power grab. And then, of course, there is our former president, Donald J. Trump. He played a role in these 4 years of national turmoil as well. And he actually must own up to something that had to do with his personality, his style, or what have you. And so there's enough blame to go around. But before I go further, tell me your thoughts about that as you think about the last 4 years and the division that you saw taking place in the country.
Well, you know, can you hear me well?
Yes.
Okay. You know, I really feel like that the divide in the country started long before Trump, Biden, or even Obama. I really feel that the divide in the country really started in the 1960s. You know, up until World War II, we were, well, you know, after World War II, the United States was pretty much one nation. You know, even with the integration of black soldiers into the army, in the armed services. But when it came to about in the 1960s, America began to get away from her core traditional values. And a split began to occur in that time period. We had the Free Love Society, and people began to, you know, divide over whether, you know, when prayer was taken out of schools and all of that, and, you know, traditional marriage began to be questioned, you know, sexual immorality became, you know, free love became normative, to say to speak. I really began to see that, you know, and then so what happens in our culture oftentimes spills over into our political policy. The policy don't come first. The shift comes in culture. And when the shift occurs in culture, then the shift began to occur everywhere. So, you know, then we began to see the really, you know, and I think up until, you know, till Bill Clinton, when we saw the, you know, the shift in the morals of America, we began to see that great shift take place, you know, from the 60s, late 50s to the 60s to the 70s, free love and all those type of things. You know, everybody was, if it feels good, do it, and do it your own way. And, you know, and then, so I would like to call it a revolution against traditional values began to occur in this nation.
Mm-hmm.
And when that revolution took full circle, or came full circle, then it began to spill over into our politics. You know, during the 1970s and 80s, nobody would have thought about, you know, same-sex marriage. They believed in civil unions. That became popular. And so when, you know, as we went further away from our traditional values, our politics began to go further away. Our education began to go further away. I know when you were a kid and I was a kid, they prayed in school. We started every day with a prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now we are so far away from that. So now, you know, we have identity politics. Everybody, tell me what the word I'm looking for. Everything became pragmatic. Politics became pragmatic. you know, everybody trying to please themselves, politicians using political office for whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we are right now. You know, what did Chuck Schumer say? We're going to take Georgia and we're going to change America.
Yeah.
He didn't say, you know, he's the representative of New York. He's the senator from New York.
Right.
He didn't say anything about cleaning up New York. He said, we're going to change America. So this identity politics, you know, began to supersede, and it's really a power grab. You know,
yeah.
That's really what we've seen take place in America, a power grab.
Right. So let me stop you there and say, yes, all of that, no doubt. That's a great layout. And so as we've come now to where we are and these last, yeah, because, you know, when I think about when President Obama was the president and, you know, I never believed that the country, you know, obviously was perfect, even though we had made a historical decision in, you know, voting in our first black president. But it certainly was a monumental moment there, you know, a historical moment. It was a really a refreshing thing, because the truth is there is no way that Barack Obama could have been voted in as our 44th president, except there was a large vote by the white population, you know, that who embraced him and accepted him. And of course, when that happened, you know, people, you know, just was elated. And then, of course, as his administration began to take shape, we began to see a lot of things. And you know, like people on the left and on the right, you know, as we begin to observe some of his policies, obviously, you know, just like in every administration, you begin to see things that you like and things that you didn't like. And right towards the end of the first term of the Obama administration, there were things, you know, that I began to see, you know, that I didn't like. You know, I wasn't surprised that I didn't like, but, you know, it was just things. And then, of course, when the second term came around is when he all of a sudden had, you know, a change. You know, we, during those times, we were talking about the word, the buzzword that was going around then was that he evolved. You know, we're talking about an evolution. You know, he evolved. You know, first it was Joe Biden who came out. He actually beat President Obama to the punch, as they say. And then President Obama came out. And so they both, who had previously said that marriage was between a man and a woman, then all of a sudden now had this evolution, you know, in their beliefs. And so then that kind of surprised a lot of people, even people who had voted for him. And so I began to see people turn away from him. And you know what, Pastor Moore, the thing is that as people began to turn away from him, you know, because like you used the term, the identity politics, and the one thing that the left is good at is that once you begin to question or to criticize, you know, those on the left, and particularly I'm talking about the leaders, or in this case, former President Barack Obama, then, of course, as you remember, a lot of people who voted for him that began to turn from him, then suddenly they were began to be called racist. You know, but it wasn't an issue of them being racist. Remember, they had voted the man in. It had to do with the policies that they thought that he would not only embrace, but had embraced, and that they, he would continue to embrace. And so now we're talking about a redefinition of the family. And so it was like as if he was asking everyone, hey, just accept my change of heart and let's just move on. And you just have to suck it up and just simply accept us for who we are as a nation now. And the nation as a whole didn't buy that. And so by the time, as you know, by the time of the end of his second term, that's when, of course, President, well, then candidate, you know, Donald Trump came on the scene. And let's face it, most people did not even give him a remote chance of becoming president. But I think it was because a lot of people were turned off by what had happened in the Obama administration, you know, some of the changes in his policies and things like that. Donald Trump became more of a viable option because in looking at Hillary Clinton, people just simply saw that this would be really a third term of the Obama administration. And so here we are. So we are a divided nation. And so what I wanted to do today to follow up on what I talked about Wednesday, I had made the statement or the declaration, if you will, is that we're asking the question, can a divided nation heal? Now, I go into the reasons why I stated that I don't think we can. Now, I could be wrong, and in something like this, I'd want to be wrong. But before, you know, we discuss these reasons that I listed, but let me hear from your heart, Pastor Moore, as far as just to directly answer that question from your perspective. Do you think a divided nation, America, do you think, given what you see now, do you think we can heal?
Well, you know, Pastor Cooper, if you split your pants, you know, there are certain levels, and you've been a man of fashion, you know, you would know and understand this. You can, you know, a tiny split is something that can be mended and made, you know, right. It can be stitched up. But when you split your pants down the middle, and there is just a you know, horrific tear. You really, those pants, even if you sew them back together, unless you are, you know, real good tailor, those pants are always gonna have some marks of that tear.
Yeah.
And I think that the type of split that we are seeing in America is not one that gathered around the campfire and singing Kumbaya or giving everybody a stimulus check or any of those things can heal. It will take a master seamstress or seamstress to repair this, you know, but so because of the nature of the tear, not just that we are divided, but the nature of the division is, I think, what we need to, you know, focus on. What is the absolute, you know, what is the nature of our division? You know, if me and you neighbors, you know, there's something that can happen between us, and if I back into your fence, there's something that we can get repaired. But there are some things that keep people who live next door to one another from talking to each other for the rest of their lives.
Right, right.
And it is the nature of the divide.
Right.
So, critical for me is, what is the nature of the division that separates America, that has split America?
Good. Now, let's do this. Let's do this. So you know, so I identified some things, you know, just reading and things, and here are things that I think that will, you know, that will really be like what you're talking about. It's going to take some kind of seamstress or seamster to put us together, because these things are real and raw to a lot of people. And so let me just throw a couple of things out. First of all, one of the things that hurt the Democrats in them, you know, getting more House members, for example, because remember, the Democrats lost some House and the Republicans gained a lot. I think there's only like maybe, what, 7 or 8 in terms of the difference of. And one of the things was this defund of the police. In fact, so much so that even former President Barack Obama chastised the party, the Democratic Party, and said, hey, you guys need to throw that out. If you're talking about defunding the police, you're not going to win elections, because even though there are some bad apples in the police department, it's not that many bad apples where people want to completely eradicate the police from society. So give me your thoughts about that. So I guess what I'm saying is, I find it difficult to come together and to unify when you have a segment of the culture talking about let's defund the police. And then, of course, they tried to get sophisticated and say, well, defund don't mean to get rid of, but it's just to, you know, to rearrange some things and maybe put money in different places. But it's essentially the same thing. They're just trying to sweeten it up. So tell me your thoughts about this idea of refunding the police and the nature of us trying to come back together as a nation.
Well, you know, defunding the police at its root is about racism. It is a tactic that has been used, and you and I, well, we've talked about this a thousand times. It is something that is used best to control, people. It is something that is used every time a political candidate. Now you think about Donald Trump. That, since you said that, before Donald Trump ran for office, Donald Trump received awards from the NAACP. He was heavily involved in with Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, all the members of Black society, Black community. He was friends with them. But the minute the man ran for political office, what is the moniker that they gave him? A racist.
Mm-hmm.
And every instance where the left finds something they don't like about the right or about something they can use against the right, they find a vehicle which would transport them to the place where they want to go. And I don't really think they're trying to get rid of the police. I think they're trying to, the police, defunding the police is the car they're riding in to get them to, for societal domination and control over society. Police are the last leg of defense that all of us have, not just white people, Black, everybody. The police is the last leg of defense. Who was to stop the riots in Washington last week? It was the Capitol Police. And the Army wasn't there, the Air Force wasn't there, the military. The police were the last leg of defense against tyranny and riot. And so I call the police sometimes. We all have called the police or used the police for various things. So even Black people use the police.
Right.
But what is the difficulty? What is the, you know, why are they saying get rid of the police? Because you have groups who want to be able to dominate, have control over society, and they use the minimal incidents that occur with police and Black people, and they use that as a clarion call to where now they want the police to have social workers riding in the car with them.
Right.
And find, you know,
right.
But that ain't gonna work.
Ain't gonna work. Okay, that's not gonna unify us, because obviously people. Now, what about even, let's talk about something else, because I think it's important. So I think another thing that is an issue that is, when we think about this coming together, and, you know, what about Black Lives Matter? Because it is a controversial phenomena that's going on in our society, because, as we know, there's two parts to that, I should say. And I separate and I say there's the entity or the organization, which is clearly Marxist. In fact, the three women who have organized and started it said in their own words that we are trained Marxists. And then, of course, on their website, they had listed some very, very controversial things, and one of which they say that they deliberately want to interrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family. And they said, now they have taken that down. And I suspect that that's because, you know, the fallout or the fallback on that was so devastating to them. But then you have the quote, the movement of the people, you know, who are, you know, so-called protesters. But then we are seeing even now in Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, Washington, the Black Lives Matter is hooking up with Antifa, and they are wreaking havoc and have been for the last couple of years. And then this last summer, when they were, you know, beating people up and burning buildings and looting and going to restaurants and turning over people's tables while they're eating and all of that. And interestingly, nobody on the left had anything to say, including then candidate Joe Biden. And so when I think about Black Lives Matter, you know, the movement may have some legitimacy to it, Russell, but when I think about the coming together and healing as a nation, I don't see Black Lives Matter as a as an entity that will serve that purpose. Tell me your thoughts about that.
Black Lives Matter, except when the children are 8 years old and in Chicago. Black Lives Matter, except when they're in New York, except when they're burning things and tearing down things and Black people are being killed. And Black Lives Matter, except when Black people are killing other Black people. What is Marxism? That is the question, because you said that, and we need to ask ourselves. Marxism and socialism carry with it the idea that, and you know, we saw this when we went, you know, to another foreign country, which I'm not going to name, but we're together, to where everything supposedly belongs to the people. Everything supposedly belongs to the people, but yet controlled or give it out. It's the same thing with this idea about the transition of wealth. Everything supposedly, you know, taking from the people who have, giving to the people who don't have, without any work effort or anything else. And so Black Lives Matter really came with the idea of, we didn't get our 40 acres. Y'all needed to give us. That's why you saw them in the restaurant spitting on people, going in the neighborhood saying, that's our house. It used to be on our land. Because it carries with that idea. You see, all of this is linked. All this is stuff. All this stuff is linked. There's no different compartments. All of these things are linked together. All these things are working as one. These ideas, you know, even with racism and Marxism, because there's only one people. We should be the people of the people. And, you know, and we should all have equality and all that, you know. And so, all that's the idea. All of those are ideologies that, you know, are linked together and really speak to the fact that we believe that, you know, nobody should be a property owner. Nobody should have. I mean, there's nothing in this world that's keeping anybody from succeeding, from being successful. Whether you're Black, white, you know, I mean, you and I both grew up in the South, and we both were victims of some. However, it did not keep us from going to school, from being what we wanted to be, and doing what we wanted to do. All right?
Mm-hmm.
These ideas that these people are proposing are ideas that say they're ideas for lazy people, for people who say, but I don't want to do anything. I want somebody else to give me what I have. I want to be on the government. I want to be, and you know, that's just not how we grew up. America is a capitalist society. You know, it's about opportunity. It's for people who want opportunity. Now, if you let your credit get bad, okay, then get bad, you limit your opportunity.
Right.
All right. So, you know, they really want us to excuse their bad behavior.
Right.
Excuse these things and say, give me this, give me that. Make me, you know, I'm sorry. That's just not the American way.
Yeah, let me interrupt right here. We're going to take just a 30-second break. Russell Moore and I, thank you all for listening in. Just 30 seconds. I'm just going to take a little station break here, and we'll be right back. And stay with us, okay? Stay with us.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, we're back now. This is Wayne Cooper. This is Wayne Cooper, the Voice of Reason talk show host. I'm here with my friend Russell Moore. And so Russell Moore is here with us. He's helping us answer this question, can a divided nation heal? And so there's another thing that I think is important, because this also revolves around, you know, the things that we believe, and it has to do with life. And so one of the things that I think is hard to be unified around is this unfettered abortion. And in other words, it's is that a dog back? It's unfettered abortion. And what happens is that people have strong feelings on either side, and so it's hard to come around, you know, on one accord and say we're going to be united, because this is strong, you know, because you have people. And let me just say, sometimes we automatically assume that when we talk about abortion, that it automatically means that the people who are against abortion are always religious, but that is not always the case, okay? You have people who are not religious at all, but who just simply believe that, you know, life begins, you know, at conception, and that life ought to be respected, okay? And so it's not all about religion all the time. And so we are divided over that issue. And even this generation, I've looked at, you know, statistics where even in the millennial generation, where you'd be surprised how many millennials believe that abortion ought to be outlawed. Okay. And so this is going to be a hard issue to unify around. And so, Russell, I want to just give you a couple of minutes to just give some thoughts about this idea of unfettered abortion and how that might keep us from being a united nation.
Well, South Carolina now is working on a bill, the heartbeat bill, that once baby has a heartbeat, you cannot have an abortion. Mm-hmm. And I think that heartbeat occurs at so many weeks, whether it's 4 or 5 weeks. Whatever, I may be wrong with that, but whatever that time is, when that baby gets a heartbeat, that it is a person. It is a person.
Hmm.
Now, like I told you, you know, like you said, you don't have to be religious to have a strong opinion on this. But the main argument I hear is, I have a right to choose what I do with my body. Now, the question is not, do you have a right to choose what you do with your body? Because in order to get pregnant, you've already made a choice. You've already made a choice. So what you're telling me is now, you deserve another choice to undo what you've done. Because if you make love, if you have intercourse, and it goes through the natural sequence of events, the chances of you getting pregnant are, you know, pretty good. A woman getting pregnant. So they're saying, I want a choice that if I decide, and like I told you now, where did it start? The moral. It is a moral decision. It's not a physical decision. It is a moral decision. Like I told you, in the 60s and the 70s, the morals of the nation began to change. Abortions were few and far between. Abortion was one time illegal in this country because the vast majority of people were not split. But there was a consciousness that life was sacred. However, once we began to go down the road of moral decline, young life, life in the womb became, you know, valueless, and not on that path, but old people now, as you and I get older, old people in many, you know, in the Oriental society have much value, they're cherished, but in our culture, when you get old, people push you aside. So they're pushing aside the young, very young and the very old. It's because we have had a moral shift. And you talked about what divides us. That is part of a split. That's what I said. Some decisions can be, a picket fence can be repaired. But when you get to the very essence of life, that's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Life on earth, living life. That is a decision. That unless we come back to, you know, to a different moral position, which I don't think we are now, and I don't see anywhere close to it, I don't think we would ever come back into agreement.
Okay.
On abortion.
Okay. So that's an issue that we definitely have to take into consideration. You know, it's called in our culture today, I'm not going to talk much about it, but I want to get your thoughts. It's called cancel culture. And I definitely think that that is something that will continue to divide us, because it primarily serves to, you know, to silence the conservative voice in America. You know, Donald Trump had nearly 75 million people to vote for him. So no matter how you feel about that, you're talking about a major segment of the country that voted for the former president. And so there's been, you know, talk about not hiring people who worked on his staff or his administration, or you've been hearing lately about deprogramming people. Let me tell you something. People aren't crazy. People knew who they were voting for. They knew that Donald Trump was not perfect, just like Joe Biden isn't perfect, and he's just as flawed as Donald Trump. And we will see that momentarily. But, you know, all of a sudden, you know, people want to cancel you out. So tell me your thoughts here briefly about what you think about this cancel culture, because from my perspective, as long as that is allowed to stay around, we definitely would never have healing in our country.
Okay, Pastor Cooper, what's the difference between cancel culture and the same thing? They're both working to cut off life. They say, well, we're going to cut you off if you don't speak to it. This is what Adolf Hitler did in the Night of the Long Knives back many years ago. He cut off all of his enemies. He cut them off. And this is what some, you know, communist countries do. They cut people off. They send them to retraining camps so they can think the right way, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see this is the same part of moral decay and decline. And man, what Dr. King spoke about, man's end. If you don't talk like I do, you don't think like I do about social and moral issues, then you don't have a right basically to earn a living, to live, or to do anything. And so it is just overreach of the, you know, of the same principle of abortion. Cutting people, I mean, you know, you're talking about, you hate people so much because they work for a president, you know, who had America First policy. So you hate that man that much to where you want these people not to be able to work, not to be able to take care of their families, not to be able to live. That is adult abortion. That is the same principle that the abortion debate is resting on. And until, you know, well, that's a divide, because that's saying, unless you think like I think, you're not worthy of living. It goes into Marxism. The government controls everything. The government controls all the wealth, all the jobs, no free speech, no say-so. Nobody can make any decisions but the few. Didn't you see where all the Democratic governors and mayors told everybody else, you can't go out for dinner, you can't do this, you can't do that, and they themselves were breaking their own law?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the only reason they confessed it up is because they got caught.
Yeah. Well, we saw that yesterday where President Biden had signed an executive order about, at least on the federal grounds, the mandatory mask wearing, and then he was caught two times without wearing his mask. So already he's broken his own laws. And then, of course, when the press secretary was asked about it. You know, she says because it was a historic day, and then her words were, quote, there are bigger things to worry about. Isn't that amazing? So, yeah. So there's one other thing before we have to close this segment out. You know, the other thing I think that is controversial that definitely, and it has to do with what is called, we've heard it, but a lot of people probably don't pay a lot of attention to it, but single-payer health care, because basically what it is, because you were talking earlier about Marxism and socialism, and, you know, what this is for people out there who don't know, it is really when the government takes over the health care industry, and pretty much it kills all of the private health care companies. And that is a disaster because you're talking about long waiting lines. You're talking about certain surgeries you need. You got to wait forever. And some people in some of these socialist countries have literally died waiting for surgeries, operations they needed. So tell me briefly, what are your thoughts about this single payer health care with the government running everything in health care?
Well, if you don't have to pay premiums, who's going to pay them? It means taxes, higher taxes.
Mm-hmm.
If there are no more premiums that you have to pay, who will pay? Who will be responsible? The government will now determine how much taxes you pay for your health care, and like you said, and the quality of health care will go down because, you know, when you go to a buffet, the best steak in the world on that buffet.
Mm.
They don't have the best steak. They got, you know, when you go to the restaurant, when you go to this chop house, when you go to that thing, you can get you a fine grade of meat. But when you go to a buffet, you know, Kobe beef on the menu, and the government is saying, dispense, and we're going to say what love, we're going to say how and everything about how what kind of care you get. And therefore, the care for all America will go down. I think we need some type of going up, premiums are high.
Mm.
But
mm-hmm.
to say that the government knows best, you see, it goes back to that same old Marxist, socialist government mentality.
Yeah.
It goes
yeah.
back to that same thing, and that's moral. And so I think, and I know we ain't going to, I'm going to close out, I think we have a moral crisis in this nation. That until that moral crisis is fixed, if it
mm-hmm.
can be,
mm-hmm.
we will not see America as one again.
Amen.
As we know it.
And let me say this, yeah, and to finish off, because we got like a minute and 45 seconds left, this show's going by so fast, but I should have planned it for an hour, but I did it for 45 minutes. But I want to say you're absolutely right, just in closing this, the moral aspect of it obviously comes from this issue of, you know, one nation under God. And whenever you leave God out, you know, whenever a nation abandons God, when you read the scripture, you discover that God will abandon the nation. And so America's trying hard to abandon God. And in many respects, she has abandoned God. And so we're seeing the natural consequences of that. And so I want to thank our guest today, our dear friend, Reverend Russell Moore from the Holy Nation Church there in the city of Columbia, South Carolina, the capital city of the great state of South Carolina. I had the privilege, my family and I, of living there for nearly 7 years. And so we're going to have him back on in some of our future broadcasts. And I want to thank you, Pastor Moore, and to all of you who are taking the time today to listen to us. God bless you. Have a great weekend, and we will see you again on Monday here at the Voice of Reason Talk Show with your host, Wayne Cooper. Take care of yourselves and have a great weekend.